Welcome, Wisconsin. I am Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I am joined this half hour by Dr. Kristen Lierley, candidate for the 8th Congressional District here in the state of Wisconsin. Just announced. How exciting. Congratulations, Kristen, and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Maggie. I can't tell you how much enthusiasm we have seen, like grassroots from all over the country, definitely within the district. It has been an absolute blast of a week since we announced on Thursday.
I was thrilled to hear the announcement myself. So count me as one of your enthusiastic fans for this open seat. This is the congressional district that Mike Gallagher announced a few months ago during the Alexander Mayorkas impeachment fiasco in Congress that he would not be seeking re-election. This is a big deal. So tell folks, your district, the 8th, covers Green Bay and Appleton. It's the entirety of the Door Peninsula. It's a big chunk. It hasn't been held by a Democrat, I think, since like 2011. What's your plan of attack?
Yeah, Dr. Steve Kagan actually was the last Democrat to hold this seat. That stretches from Niagara in the north all the way down to Quinney. I say Quinney specifically because Electa Quinney was the first Native American female school teacher in Wisconsin. So I was so proud of her. And then from Washington Island all the way over to Wittenberg. I mean, this is a huge district.
Huge.
But it is known to be a very swingy district. And I like to call it the swingiest district in the swingiest state. And that's our opening. Because when people look at the numbers for this district, they're like, yeah, this is a deep red district. But when you talk to the people, and when you look at what's been happening here recently, Janet Protasiewicz only lost this district by 4 points last year. And wow, we didn't advertise about abortion, which is the huge thing that people are voting on. Whether we're talking about it or not, we're voting on it because people recognize that their personal freedoms are at stake. So we didn't advertise on that at all, and she only lost by 4 points. And so now that I'm out there as somebody who was born in the district, like my family has been in this district for 6 generations, I care deeply about the people here. I stay in touch with my high school friends. Like, these are my people. I know what they care about. I'm out talking with them all the time. I have been. We see a clear path here, Maggie. The district sees it and the country sees it.
I totally agree. When I look at the Wisconsin congressional map, this was always one of the districts that I personally thought that is winnable. It has been won by a Democrat in the past. And I think now in this moment, it's no accident that you're an OBGYN and can speak to the importance of women's healthcare choice and what this means to all Wisconsinites. We've seen our law sort of teeter totter back and forth. Dane County court deciding in December that our 1849 law before women could even vote actually didn't ban abortion, that it banned feticide. All of this uncertainty and confusion, what impacts has it had that you've personally observed for your patients or that you hear from your colleagues in obstetrics and gynecology?
It's impacted all of us. We can't take care of our patients. It's not as easy as just taking abortion away. You can't ever eliminate abortion from women's healthcare because it's tied to miscarriage management. It's tied to infertility treatment. That's what the whole uproar about IVF is down in Alabama. Right. You can't have IVF if you don't have abortion care. If you connect the dots, you just can't have both of them. What about people with complicated heartbreaking pregnancies? People, you know, when your water breaks at 17 weeks with a desired pregnancy, those people need abortion services and they need doctors who are trained to care for them. And that's another problem that we're seeing, Maggie. The fallout from these abortion bans means that women aren't getting the care that they need, in part because doctors and healthcare providers aren't available. There aren't enough doctors and healthcare providers, including nurses and techs and everybody across the country. But in rural areas, like much of the 8th Congressional District, in rural areas, we don't have doctors to care for people. And we know that people who live in these areas have worse outcomes because of it.
That's the rural healthcare crisis writ large, not just about women's healthcare, is a real issue. And that's when I've had conversations with my friends who, for whatever reasons, are personally morally opposed to abortion. And we get into this. This is one of the issues that I bring up. Listen, hey, you live in a big city. You can, and people you know and women that you love can access abortion if they need to. If they're of means, they can access abortion. Rich ladies that live in big cities have always been able to get safe abortions, period, full stop. Mm-hmm. It is women that have less means and women in rural areas that can't drive for days or take days off from work. That's who this is hurting. Just like you said, Kristen, women in the 8th CD for sure.
Yeah. And it's not just abortion care. I had a conversation with somebody the other day who was telling me that she had to drive 2 hours to get her Depo Provera shot, her contraception shot, every 3 months. That's a half a day off of work minimum for her to just maintain her contraception. But this is what works for her. And there's nowhere closer for her. And by the way, if Donald Trump gets reelected, it's not just abortion that's going away. It is potentially contraception. The Comstock laws that are still on the books, we saw what happened here in Wisconsin with old laws that are still on the books. They can come back to haunt you. And we are very concerned that these laws could very much compromise our ability to get birth control in this country.
Our listeners may not believe this, but Kristen and I did not coordinate a point-by-point rebuttal of the Republican platform when it comes to healthcare access and the Comstock law, but I just talked about the Comstock law and the breadth of the language, and that basically even in states where it is legal, the manner of interpretation and application of the Comstock law could back us into a nationwide ban on abortion-related services, even in cases where the woman's health and life is at risk. And not to mention the fact, as again, I have conversations with friends and loved ones, they talk about these exceptions relating to the mother's life. And I said, have you talked to an OBGYN about this? Because there's no magic light switch that it's like, oh, yep, now we can. There's a couple of circumstances where clearly the woman's life is at risk, but how at risk do you have to let a woman get before a doctor will assist her and save her life with this healthcare that should be accessible to all women? It's a really scary moment. You also noted the dearth, of course, of doctors and in this care in more rural counties. The other thing that I worry about a lot is we've got two big medical schools in the state of Wisconsin, and the pipeline for doctors that might serve in these rural areas. I don't know if I'd want to go to med school in Wisconsin if this isn't training that I can receive at either the University of Wisconsin or the Medical College of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
What are you hearing from folks about the educational pipeline here in Wisconsin?
I'm so glad you asked that question. I've been doing events, meetings with the medical students up here in Green Bay for a couple of years now. We have a meeting tonight and they're so worried. So you may not know this, but when we started to recognize that we didn't have enough doctors in rural areas, the University of Wisconsin and the Medical College, our two medical schools, both went into action and they both created programs to get people out to areas outside of Madison and Milwaukee. So we've got medical students in Green Bay and La Crosse and Marshfield and all across the state. And here in Green Bay, we have a medical school and we've got wonderful, brilliant students here who are dedicated and want to come back to a place like Green Bay or Door County or Hudson, like you name it, a place where doctors are not necessarily drawn unless they have some sort of a connection. They want to be part of that solution. But now they're questioning, can I practice here? And it's not just OBGYN doctors. Think about family medicine doctors. Family medicine doctors are the safety net in our rural communities, and they do the vast majority of deliveries. When I work in rural Minnesota, my job at one of the sites where I work is to support our family medicine doctors who are there doing C-sections, doing most of the obstetrical care. They're wonderful, and they just need somebody there to bounce things off of, to support them and make sure that they have all their questions answered. And, you know, just, it's a community, it's a healthcare community. We're losing that in Wisconsin because family medicine doctors are not comfortable taking care of pregnant women because of these terrible laws. And if you don't have a family medicine doctor in your community, guess who doesn't get healthcare? Nobody gets healthcare. Kids, men, young people, old people, nobody gets healthcare because there's nobody there for you. This crisis is so much deeper than just abortion. It is really laying bare how compromised our entire healthcare system is and how much work we have to do to fix it.
And instead of speaking to facts, using science, trusting doctors, trusting women, trusting families, we've got what I think in many instances may be sincerely held religious beliefs, but it has become a public policy nightmare. Some breaking news, Kristen, want to bring it to our listeners. Just minutes ago, Arizona Republicans thwarted attempts by Democrats in that state to quickly undo, to quickly repeal a reinstated 160-year-old ban on abortions in the state. This is the state of the GOP. But my line from before you came on the air was, careful what you campaign on, you might just get it. And in this case, this chaotic, this crisis of our healthcare system affecting not just women, but families, and I think more acutely affecting poorer families as well as rural families, children and men included, is truly creating chaos for everyone. As potentially the first woman to ever represent the 8th Congressional District, do you feel a special weight given this moment, or is it all upside and exciting for you?
It's a huge weight. Do you know how many women have represented Wisconsin in Washington, D.C.? Two. Tammy Baldwin and Gwen Moore. And I'm going to be the third. And here's why. I'm the right person at the right time. The 8th CD is dedicated to making sure that families have access to healthy lives, healthy environments, healthy healthcare. I mean, we are community builders up here.
Can you
stick around? That is what I'm going to bring. You bet.
So great, great. Dr. Kristen Lierley, recently announced candidate for the 8th Congressional District. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in just a moment. I don't know about you all, but what I need is more Dr. Kristen Lierley, a recently announced candidate on the Democratic ticket for the 8th Congressional District here in the state of Wisconsin. I reached out early this week, maybe late last week, right after your announcement on Thursday. We booked you in. We had no idea that the Arizona Supreme Court decision was coming down yesterday. Mm-hmm. But as the fates would have it, here we are. I can think of no one better to ask about the impacts of that Arizona ban than Dr. Lierley. You worked in Arizona last summer.
It's so ironic. So what's happening in Arizona is what happened here after Dobbs. Remember, Dobbs happened. We stopped doing all abortion care here in Wisconsin. And that's the reason I went to Arizona. And now they're in the same boat, living under this draconian ban that was instated way before women could even vote. And my colleagues, I was just talking with one of my colleagues who's still in the place where I was practicing. She said, I just had to talk with a patient about accessing an abortion. This is general OBGYN stuff. She's not working in an abortion clinic. She's working in Northern Arizona. And she said, I don't even have the language to talk to this patient and help her understand why she can't get the healthcare she needs, because she doesn't understand how politics is interfering in her ability to get this health care. And now they're scrambling to find resources, to find transportation, to find all of those things that these people need so that they can get care that they should just be able to get right there. Maggie, this is the reason I'm running. It's not just about abortion. It's about healthcare. It's about making sure people have what they need. We have to do better, whether it's in Arizona or in Wisconsin or in Arkansas. We need national protection for abortion.
Period. Full stop. I don't understand what is so difficult about being able to distinguish between personal faith beliefs, what you personally may believe as a point of your own family or own personal morality, and what is legally a right, a freedom that is essential for women to fully participate in this country. And the lack of acknowledgement of these horrifying situations that have resulted, not just Mrs. Cox, right, in Texas, but there are stories like this across the country that are simply heartbreaking. The callousness and the internal conflict, the cognitive dissonance to me, if you are running on a pro-life platform with these sorts of ideas and you're depriving people of the care that is needed to live a full and robust life, is really challenging for me as a woman. I noticed something in your biography, and I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about this, because holy cow, I'm just going to call you Superwoman from now on. Not only are you a medical doctor and an OBGYN, you also have a master's in public health. And by the time you graduated with both your MD and your master's degree, you had 4 kids under the age of 10. I read that and it was like, I used to think my resume was good. I got nothing. Can't even hold a light to Dr. Lyerly. Tell us how you made that work as a young mom and as a student, because as we all know, medical school ain't easy.
It's not. Well, my kids are amazing. I have 4 sons. And they're the reason. I mean, I can't look them in the eye without knowing that I'm doing something to fight for their future. So they are just my absolute joy. My oldest son actually was my campaign manager last time around when I ran for state assembly. He was stuck at home. He was in college, and he's a music guy, so he couldn't do any of his, you know, performance credits. So he became my campaign manager, and now he's part of this campaign. He's so excited. He's all about it. And so are the other 3 boys. So that's a joy. And then the public health piece is so cool, because the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine is also a school of public health. Yes. We were the first state to be a school of public health, which is totally in line with what Wisconsin is. We are progressive. We are thoughtful. We are about community. We're about taking care of each other. So when they made that step and added that public health aspect, that was when I was in school. And that to me said, oh yeah, I want that. And it ties in so beautifully with the work that we're doing right now. My first reason for running was COVID, because I needed for my patients to be well taken care of and to have good information to base their medical decisions on. Now it's another spicy issue, but ultimately it comes down to me sitting in an exam room with my patient, telling me their story, and regardless of what their ideology is, what their religious background is, what their beliefs were when they were just thinking about how they might make this decision, it's different when it's really you, when you're really sitting there and you need to have all of your options and you need to have all of your people around you. You need to know that you are supported. And it's those moments that I treasure, that I carry with me, and that propel me to be able to make this change on a higher level in Washington, D.C. come next January for the people of the 8th Congressional District.
I love it. I've said once or twice that strong, engaged, capable women make fierce sun advocates for women. I love to see that. We've talked a lot about abortion today. What are 1 or 2 other key issues for your platform, Dr. Lyerly?
You know, it's not just abortion. It's all of healthcare. It's all of the social determinants. So we were just out in Algoma in Kewaunee County talking with people about, how can we farm responsibly? We're seeing such a loss of family farms. That's affected my family. My grandfather was a dairy farmer. My mom grew up on the farm. My Uncle Bud still owns the farm. He doesn't farm it anymore, though. There are no cows, because industrial farming is really taking over. And we're not going to turn back the clock. So we have to figure out how to do that well. How can we protect our water? The Great Lakes and all of our streams and our wells here in Kewaunee County, they've had such pollution from some of these big farms that people's groundwater has been contaminated. Their property loses value. They can't live in this place if they don't have access to water. So clean water is critical. Of course, climate change, you know, responsible energy sources. I mean, there's no end to the list of problems that need to be solved. Social Security, Medicare, like you name it. I want to be part of the solution because it all ultimately affects our health, both as the public and as individuals.
I couldn't agree with you more. I love to see the energy. I'm so appreciative of your time this afternoon. I hope we will do this often if you are up for it. I'd love to have you back, Dr. Lyerly.
And How often do you get to see a doctor and a lawyer hang out like this together so happily?
both women with a lot of things to say about a lot of different things, right?
Absolutely.
We will absolutely do it again. I really appreciate you. My best of luck to you. Again, you're welcome here anytime. We need more folks like you getting engaged and spreading the word about especially public health. All of these things are about increasing community wellness so that all of us do better together. Here in Wisconsin, we care about one another. I love that message. Thanks again to Dr. Kristen Lyerly, candidate just newly announced for the 8th Congressional District here in the state of Wisconsin. Go, Dr. Kristen! I'm Maggie. We're going to take a couple of really important messages. Don't go anywhere. I got more good news coming up for you after this quick set of messages. Thanks again, Dr. Lyerly. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Maggie.
Hello, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. You can join us for the last half hour of my show this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. My big thanks to Dr. Kristen Lyerly, who we just chatted with about her candidacy for the 8th Congressional District, just announced last week, Thursday, running for the soon-to-be vacated seat left by Republican Mike Gallagher, who took a pummeling after he refused to support the impeachment fiasco against Department of Homeland Security Secretary Alexander Mayorkas. Watch this space, folks. We're going to try to have Kristen on as frequently as her schedule will bear, because that is a winnable seat for Democrats this fall. I wanted to share some other good news with you. We're going to stay on, and I'm going to share a little bit of the breaking news first coming out of Arizona just moments ago. Democratic lawmakers, in response to yesterday's Arizona Supreme Court decision, attempted to get legislation moving through the Republican-controlled both houses of the Arizona Congress, through both the Arizona Senate and their House. Democrats shouting from the floor, save women's lives. But Republican leaders in the Senate removed the bill from the day's agenda earlier today, legislative aides said. And in the other chamber, in the Republican-controlled House, one Republican who has basically done a complete flip-flop, more on these folks in a second, don't go anywhere. One of the Republican flip-floppers in Arizona actually called for striking down the 1864 law and made a motion to vote on a Democratic repeal bill that had been stalled in the Arizona House for months. But Republican leadership in the House quickly put the House into recess before any vote could be held. Democrats on the floor jeered as their Republican colleagues filed out of the chamber. I don't see why we wouldn't move forward, State Senator Anna Hernandez, Democrat of Phoenix, said. Are they serious about this or are they not? Are they just backpedaling when they realize they're on the losing side of a major policy battle? Yeah, that's exactly what's happening. Can there really be any meaningful debate? But that is exactly what's going on. I mentioned before we were joined by our fabulous guest, Dr. Kristen Lierley, candidate for Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District, that Carrie Lake is all over. I mean, you can roll the tapes. We got the receipts. She's the flip-flopper of flip-floppers, including Donald Trump, also flippity-floppity. Trump doesn't really understand what the Supreme Court ruling did. But Carrie Lake isn't the only flip-flopper. I don't know which House Republican in Arizona tried to make a motion to take a vote on the Democratic bill to repeal this draconian 1864 time capsule of a law. But I will bet you it is one of two folks that are coming from either Pima or Maricopa counties, which have more and more hotly contested seats. If we turn to the U.S. Congress, the U.S. House of Representatives, two representatives in Arizona are going to be extremely vulnerable this November. The first one is Representative Juan Ciscomani. He is in a pretty vulnerable district. He has previously said abortion should be left to the states and called the Arizona ruling a disaster on Tuesday. The territorial law is archaic, he said in a statement. We must do better, and I call on our state policymakers to immediately address this in a bipartisan manner. However, he previously voted to ban the sale of abortion medication at retail pharmacies, to prohibit the Defense Department for paying for military members' abortions, to prohibit the use of federal funds for paying for the procedure as part of a larger spending and defense bill. He's come out as staunchly pro-life. I mean, flippity-flappity, flip-flip-floop, okay. Now, Ciscomani is in Pima County, Arizona. That's part of his congressional district. That's why he is vulnerable. Pima County in Arizona has been moving or trending towards blue. That's where Tucson is. Okay, so trending towards blue. Another U.S. congressperson in the House of Representatives from Arizona that is very vulnerable, perhaps even more so, is Representative David Schweikert. He flip-flopped on Tuesday, saying this issue should be decided by Arizonans, not legislated from the bench. But previously, he has introduced the Life at Conception Act, which is a federal ban on abortion from the moment of conception. So that's Schweikert. You think they're running scared a little bit right now? Again, careful what you campaign on. Those are sort of the tidbits of good news. But that's not it. Notably, in the midterms, the Arizona State Attorney General's race was decided by 500 votes out of 2.5 million votes cast. And it went for a Democrat. The Attorney General of the state of Arizona is a person by the name of Chris Mays. Again, she won her election by just 0.2%. Now, why is this part of my, don't worry, there's good news here. Because the 1864 ban ain't going to get enforced by this attorney general. I just don't think it will. Too draconian, too scary. And that attorney general is going to be around for at least two more years. So that's another good thing. This stands in sharp contrast to the prior Arizona Republican attorney general, guy by the name of Mark Brnovich, who said after Dobbs came down from the Supreme Court, that he would enforce the 1864 law. Lovely. Lovely. So that's another good thing. We got a Democratic AG in Arizona. Now, here's the good news, but also one of the things that bothers me so much about what the Arizona Supreme Court did. The good news is that the ACLU of Arizona and Planned Parenthood Advocates of Arizona have over 500,000 petition signatures, which is far more than the just shy of 400,000 that they need to put the right to abortion on the ballot this November. So it will be on the Arizona ballot this coming November. They came out last week and said that they had these 500,000 plus signatures. So it's good. The voters of Arizona are going to decide whether or not there should be a right to abortion in Arizona. But here's what irks me even more about the Supreme Court in Arizona. Remember that language that I read before? Physicians are now on notice that all abortions except those necessary to save a woman's life are illegal. This is the Arizona Supreme Court's decision from yesterday. They went on to say, a policy matter of this gravity must be ultimately resolved by our citizens through the legislature or the initiative process. We defer, as we are constitutionally obligated to do, to the legislature's judgment, which is accountable to and thus reflects the mutable will of our citizens. They had two other options here other than the citizens from 1864 and the legislature that was comprised of, I think it counted them up, what was it, 21 men? They had two other options. The law in Arizona from 2022, or to simply leave that law in place and make plain that they understand that there is going to be a vote by Arizona citizens come November to decide the issue definitively. They could have done either one of those two things. Don't make any reference to the, quote, initiative, or in other words, a referendum in Arizona that'll be on the ballot come November, which will resolve the issue. Or they could have simply abided by the plain language of the 2022 law. No, no, no. The citizens that the Arizona Supreme Court wanted to credit were citizens in 1864. Bananas. This is unquestionably, in my opinion, I'm going to call it right now, Arizona will go for Joe Biden in November. And it'll go for Joe Biden because abortion will be on the ballot. Arizona's 11 electoral college votes will therefore be cast for Joe Biden. I think Arizona now will be absolutely pivotal in Democrats' fight to keep control of the Senate and potentially take control of the House. I've mentioned a couple of House members, Republicans, that are very vulnerable. And I think Carrie Lake's going to have a hell of a hard time running away from her plain statements supporting this draconian, antiquated, woman-hating, person of color-hating law from 1864. Flippity-floppity, flip-flip-flip. Really hard when you go very, very clear and advocate for an absolute ban on abortion and say things like, life begins at conception, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You can't get away from the logical outcomes of those positions. By the way, one little thing I wanted to point out. A guy that I read a lot of what he puts out every day, his name is Jay Kuo. I've talked about him on my show before. Whenever he talks about Carrie Lake, usually it's, you know, then in the parentheses, it says R-AZ, like a Republican from Arizona. When Jay Kuo talks about Carrie Lake, her parentheses read as Q-Pluto, meaning she subscribes to these wackadoodle QAnon beliefs, and therefore she's from Pluto. Not really a terrestrial like the rest of us. It just makes me laugh every time I see her. Carrie Lake, also the one that refused to concede her loss to Katie Hobbs back in the midterms of 2022. So again, when we look at the electoral map, I really think the Arizona Supreme Court, following what Trump is proud to announce was his accomplishment, the reversal of Roe v. Wade, that these things are going to make Republicans vulnerable coast to coast, including in the 8th Congressional District. The Democratic Party is going to have a female OBGYN as our candidate in the 8th Congressional District. Holy cow. I don't know about you, but that's an easy call. I'm voting for Dr. Kristen Lierley if I was from the 8th CD. By the way, some of my people are from Waupaca County. So I got family up there. We'll be chatting with them. So while it seems a bit depressing at the moment, and certainly will cause many women and families real harm in Arizona, hope remains on the horizon in Arizona and elsewhere. Now, you may be wondering, why the heck don't we have a referendum here in Wisconsin to decide the abortion question once and for all? Well, that's because Wisconsin doesn't allow voters to initiate referendum questions on policies like abortion or marijuana. You know, the Republican GOP is worried about some referendum questions about whether or not there can be outside funding to help run election administration and coming up with laws that aren't needed. I gotta let that go in the rearview mirror, don't I? When we come back, I'm going to share an absolutely bananas story with you. A guy got his identity stolen 36 years ago, and when he tried to make a stink about it, they locked him up in the loony bin and put him on medication. It's everybody's most dystopian nightmare. When we come back, I'm going to share that story with you here on The Maggie Dawn Show. Back with more in just a moment. Keep on running because the winner don't quit on themselves. What's up, Wisconsin? I am Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Just want to do some credit where credit is due. A little housekeeping here. I've been talking about the Arizona Supreme Court abortion decision all show. I have based a lot of my facts that I've shared with you and information that I've shared with you on great work over the last couple of days by Jay Kuo, Chris Geidner, and Heather Cox Richardson. They helped me put together more research more quickly than I could ever possibly do on my own. They do great work. You can check out their Substacks. Heather Cox Richardson, Jay Kuo, and Chris Geidner. Now, having properly footnoted my comments today, I can move on to, I couldn't believe the headline when I saw this in the Journal Sentinel. I'm just going to read it for you. Stolen identity victim incarcerated after Wisconsin man stole his identity 36 years ago. I had to read it a couple of times to figure out what the hell happened? What? So two guys 36 years ago worked together at a hot dog cart, I can't make this up, in Albuquerque, New Mexico. It sounds like an episode of Breaking Bad, does it not? We're in Albuquerque, and I was working at a hot dog cart, and my coworker stole my identity. That's what happened. And so for the last 36 years, a guy has been living under the name of borrowing money, accessing credit lines, marrying, bearing children, and being employed using the name of his coworker at a hot dog cart 33, 36 years ago. I mean, say what? And the guy that did the identity stealing has been living in Heartland, Wisconsin for the last 15 years. again, credit lines, he got loans, insurance, driver's licenses, paid taxes under the false name. I mean, this is wild. Apparently, he has been currently working remotely in the IT department at the University of Iowa Hospital, where this guy made over $140,000 a year using the fake identity from his hot dog cart coworker from 30 plus years ago. I mean, so what? I didn't know that this stuff was anything other than fictional. Now, what's fascinating, again, reporting by Drake Bentley of the Journal Sentinel, it doesn't say why the guy stole this other dude's identity. It's just really strange. Now, here's where it gets dystopian fast. The real guy, so not the identity theft, the thievery thief, gosh, can I get the right word out? The real guy, back in 2019, who was homeless at the time, tried to report the identity theft to a bank in Los Angeles. And he presented them with his actual ID and his actual social security card. But he couldn't answer the security questions right. So the bank called LAPD. What did LAPD do? They called the guy in Wisconsin using the fake name who told LAPD, no, that guy's nuts. And so LAPD arrested the real guy, okay? Charged him for impersonating himself, the other guy, slightly unclear, and then held him without bail in LA County Jail. And months of court proceedings went on and on. A California judge ruled that the real guy was nuts, not mentally competent to stand trial, because he kept saying, no, I'm not this guy. This is my real name. This is who I am. He's the one that's faking. And he had the real guy involuntarily committed to a state-run psychiatric facility where he was medicated. I just want us to take a pause here. This is the power of the state. Someone steals your identity. You are homeless. You try to do something about it. They lock you up, call you crazy, force you into a state-run mental hospital, and then medicate you. It is the stuff of nightmares. It was so bad that to get out, the real guy pled no contest to two felony charges and was released on time served. He spent a total of 147 days in a mental hospital, 428 days in county jail, which totals up 575 days institutionalized. Oh, and as a parting gift, a California judge ordered the real guy to use the identity stealer's name. You can't go by your own name anymore. You got to use this other guy's name. But do not fret, friends. It all ended up sorting out. I hope this guy that got his identity stolen gets a real good lawyer in California and sues the pants off the California judicial system for locking him up. The real guy eventually filed a complaint with the University of Iowa Hospital. And they followed up. They eventually got DNA testing. And he was able to finally prove that he was who he was saying he was all along. And this guy from Heartland has now been arrested. And what's wild is that his wife and son have written letters of support. This is my dad. He's a good guy. This is so bizarre. How good of a guy can you be if you allow someone to get locked up and you call him crazy in a psychiatric hospital because you swiped his identity? It's Count of Monte Cristo stuff, folks. But live and in living color. I couldn't believe it when I read it. Had to share it with all of you. That's going to do it for this Wednesday afternoon edition of the Maggie Dawn Show. I will be back tomorrow. We've got a special guest. You have to listen to the promos to find out who. Got a special guest tomorrow. You're not going to want to miss any of it. Thanks so much for listening. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But always remember, it is better when we stand together. That's all for now. Up next, the Devil's Advocates Radio on the Civic Media Radio Network.